Tonight, James releases the bat bomb. Mike goes chicken hunting. And John picks off lone wolves with a sniper rifle.
This is James from ShrivalPunk.com.
Hello there, children. This is Couch Potato Mike.
Welcome back to the show, Couch Potato.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to listen to last episode yet. Did you chef me in? Did you do something weird? Did you have on a guest?
Oh, I didn't even mention you.
Oh. Well,
I just did the show. I didn't even say it was going to be a solo show. I just did the show.
Oh, well, fuck you too, then.
Yeah.
We're just horrible at fucking Saturdays. It's our day that we like to do stuff.
Yeah, and I've got... I had to
force myself over here this morning. I'm like, no, I'm going to podcast. I mean, people know me from this podcast, and I can't let my Z-list celebrity go to waste.
Yeah, and I actually have quite a lot to do today.
Really? What are you doing?
Well, I probably need to replace the bracket on my ladder that is in my tiny house.
Well, you should quit having sex on that ladder.
Yeah, and I need to get tires, and that's...
They won't fit on that ladder.
No. Next week, I will... And next Saturday, you will not be able to come over and podcast, because I will be in Myrtle Beach.
You will be in Myrtle Beach with one lucky, lovely lady.
Yeah.
And if you want to be that lucky lady, send your emails to james@survivalpunk.com. I'm looking at you, Matt.
Serenity's just like, she's going to murder me right now.
I was just joking, Serenity. You're going to get to go to Myrtle Beach with James and lay on the beach and look out at the ocean and have lots and lots of kinky sex in a hotel room balcony.
Yeah. And, so she's always wanted to see the ocean. That's a life dream of hers.
I'm going to go surfing. Oh, God. Somebody needs to shoot fucking video of this. If there's anybody out there that can get over to Myrtle Beach, please videotape this motherfucker surfing.
Maybe I can shoot some video.
You might be okay at it. I mean, you do have like a skateboarding background. You used to be quite the avid skateboarder, so it is a bit different, though. I mean, I think you have to turn and stuff with the other foot on a surfboard.
I don't know.
It's a larger board, too.
It is.
Quite a bit.
I don't assume that I'm going to be a prodigy and get out there and they're like, you could be the next.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, he's a big kahuna. Class. Yeah.
He rode the humunga cowabunga from down under.
Weird James fact that I don't think even Mike knows.
Uh-huh.
I grew up madly in love with surfing movies.
Really?
Yeah, there was one about a bunch of teenagers in Hawaii.
Was it Surf Ninjas?
No, I did see that one, though. Basically, there was a tsunami or a hurricane coming, and they surfed it, and they all died. What the fuck?
That was the movie?
Yeah, they surfed the giant wave. Did you ever see
any of those old Frankie Avalon movies?
Oh, yeah.
Movies?
No,
yeah, that's where I got the whole humunga cowabunga from down under.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of those, and then just, like, random surf movies throughout, like, because...
That's
one of those things.
Dude.
Like there used to be that genre of the surf movie. Like
there was.
Really, there's. I mean, I guess they had that movie last summer that Serenity saw about the shark attack of a surfer. But and then there was there's not really like used to be that was a thing. Like you could just like turn on the TV in the 80s and like there would be a surf. A surf movie on a channel sometime.
It's funny. I've been reading one of the latest, if not the most recent, Dean Koontz novels recently called Ashley Bell. Mm-hmm. And it is like Dean has laid it on thick with the surf culture in this, with all these fucking surfer things. I mean, apparently Dean Koontz, I don't know if he is a surfer or if he's just researched the shit out of it.
Right.
I mean, but it's weird. It just started showing up in there. So, yeah, for some reason, surfing is becoming very prevalent in my life recently.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's a bucket list item. I've always wanted to go surfing.
Not me.
Even if I don't successfully catch a wave, just being on the surfboard in the ocean will be fun.
Nope, I do not want to be in the ocean. And it's not because there's sharks in there. It's because there's shit tons of water in there, and I can't swim good.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I got traumatized at a lake in Georgia. I'm trying to get over it.
You have too many fears.
You're
riddled with fears.
That's the thing. I wasn't afraid to get out there in the middle of the lake, but when I damn near drowned three times in one day, it kind of gave me a little gun shyness about it. And the ocean has its own gravity.
Yeah.
I'm serious, dude. I've stood on the edge of a continent and let the waves cut. I mean, when they fucking crash against you and then they go back out, they're trying to pull your ass into the ocean. I mean, yeah, no, that's... It can be a little bit intimidating, but I've tried to face my fear of the ocean, and it's just weird to look out on a body of water and not be able to see the other side. It's fucking weird. It's funny, because you don't... you look out at when you stand on the beach, you just don't see out as far as you think you're going to.
Yeah.
You know, it's because all those old Miami Vice and all the other movies that ever showed the fucking beach and all that stuff, they aren't usually filming it from a fucking helicopter. So you see out a hell of a lot further from that far up.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking maybe I will replace the opening music from the Ramones to a Lars Fredriksson song called Married to the Sea, which really has nothing to do with the actual... You know what? Maybe I'll find a sea shanty. Maybe I'll find a creepy old sea shanty and use as the opening theme music.
Oh, I thought you were going for like a Beach Boys thing for a minute there. But
oh, maybe.
No, you went the other direction on that.
No. Like, old cellar sea shanty.
Oh, I love to go swimming with bow-legged women and swim between their legs.
Oh, my God. I would love to write the Irish band that does the song about that mermaid that made you listen to, where it's like, he went out to sea with a mermaid... And her top half was a woman, but her bottom half was a fish. Until she left one day, and then her sister swam by, and he was okay because her bottom half was a woman.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one. Oh, God. Mermaid sex.
It's a good song. I'll see if I can find a link to that as well. But what do we have coming up in the show today?
Today on the show, let's see. We're going to be talking about the Sea of Madrid. How you're not supposed to share with people. You can only trust yourself.
He means prepping solo versus prepping in a group.
I don't know. That's
the main show topic.
Oh, yeah. There. I should have started up there with a headline.
Yeah.
Prepping solo versus group prepping.
Yes.
You know, are you prepping for a disaster by yourself? Or are you prepping for a disaster with a close group of friends or a family?
Or strangers that you've assembled a mutual assistance group. So let's start.
What's the difference? The pros, the cons.
Yeah. So. So when you're preparing for a long-term societal collapse, a disaster of that sort, a shit hit the fan, a without rule of law, you can plan to do it in a few ways. And we're not even going to talk about bugging out versus bugging in. We're going to talk about, by proxy, I guess I just mean it'll be bugging in. We won't talk about the nuances of. Bugging out in a group, like a caravan protection group? No, fuck that. That's too hard.
Marauders!
Yeah, ugh. No. Do you plan to stay at home by yourself? And by solo, I don't necessarily mean completely alone, you know, hermit style, you know, like David Thoreau.
I would be in a band of marauders. I mean, I've already got the leather jacket.
You'd get ripped to pieces.
No, I'd have a bat wrapped in barbed wire named Lucille.
Yes. And I'd 5-5-6 you in the skull.
Oh, God. See, that's the fucking age that we live in now. Now, if shit hit the fan and you ended up in a zombie apocalypse, all these motherfuckers that have been watching The Walking Dead, you know, there'd be half the fucking population will look just like Negan.
Yeah, and I expect them to last about 5 hours before they get shot and killed.
Ah, zombie apocalypse couldn't really happen.
Yeah. But yeah, so do it solo. And by solo, I don't necessarily mean alone, by yourself. That could include your family. So if you're going to solo it, that could also mean your family. But when you get to like multiple groups of family, like me and Mike, and then like we bring in Serenity, and we bring in a couple friends, Matt French comes to the homestead, and all that shit, then that's what I'm talking about, a group. So solo can mean you and your immediate family.
Now, that's the thing. When the shit hits the fan and the collapse happens and, you know, like a good portion of the population's dead and all this stuff, and we're just I am inviting everybody, all of our listeners from the Survival Punk Army and everybody who listens to this, come on out to my commune. We're in Middle Tennessee. Exact instructions to follow once the shit hits the fan.
Yeah, i.e. you must bring food for like 3 months or so, seeds, ammunition, guns. Yeah, do not come here thinking that you are going to freeload upon us. Because
No, you're coming here to work, motherfucker. We're all banding together.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that when we get into the group dynamics. So let's just talk about the Solo. So Solo.
I have a dog named Solo now.
You named that retard? You named that new dog?
Yeah, he's only got one dot, and he was the only survivor, so he's Solo.
I told your wife you're going to do that. I was like, it's going to be the last surviving dog again, so you're going to have to keep him. Then you're going to have another Tito.
He's not going to be another Tito. Fatty. This one's he's already turning out to be very ornery and mean.
I'm going to take all your dogs and get them spayed and neutered like Bob Ross, Bob Price.
Bob Barker.
Bob Barker would want you to do.
And you know what? I would not stop you.
Yeah.
Not for a fucking second.
I'm going to take your Solo dog to Walmart and give him away.
No, Solo is cute.
Whatever.
He is. He's a little fat ass.
So yeah, Solo pros, no sharing. Throw out, kindergarten rules here. You don't have to share your crayons, your ammo, or your MREs.
No, it's all yours. All yours.
Yeah. Which means that, one, you have to prepare all that stuff, so, but you don't have to give any extra. So, when I store food, I kind of have a built-in giveaway ratio. So, I have, like...
People come knocking on the door. They're like, we're hungry. We're starving. Can you spare any food? Here.
I got this nasty bag of rice.
Here's a big bag of rice. Take this. Oh, thank you, sir. We could live for another 2 days.
Something like that. Yeah, but when you're prepping as a Solo, you don't have that automatic built in where you have to share. There's no community. There's no commune. Everything that you store, all your ammo, all your food, all your, Bussy Asian Beauties mags, they're all for you.
Yeah, they're all for you. It makes it a hell of a lot easier, simpler. You know you better than anybody does, hopefully. So you know exactly what you're going to need. You can stock up on your likes. You don't have to stock up on your dislikes. It's a hell of a lot less complicated.
In a lot of ways, it can be cheaper.
You also know your limitations. You're bare bones.
Yeah. And that kind of brings us to the next thing is you can trust yourself.
Yep.
I mean, as well can as you can trust really? Yourself. Yeah. I mean, to the degree that you know that unless you have multiple personality syndrome, you're not going to go make a deal with Negan down the street to sell out yourself. No. Which would be... I would watch that movie. If someone was a collapse survivor that had multiple personality syndrome that kept like sabotaging themselves.
Oh my god.
Kind of like me, myself, and Irene during the apocalypse.
Oh my god, I would
meet myself in the apocalypse.
It'd be it'd be straight up like fucking what the fuck? I can't think of the name of the movie now. Fight Club. No.
Oh, yeah.
But except 10 times worse, because you're at war with a motherfucker across the way from you in his compound, and he keeps sabotaging your shit, and you keep sabotaging his shit, but you have no idea that they're both your compounds.
That's funny.
Like, you black out in the middle of the night, you go over there, like, how am I going to get this bastard?
Yeah.
Stealing your shit from each other. Like, every morning you wake up, all your fucking gear is gone. But you're full, and you don't know how because you don't remember eating.
I'd watch that.
Oh, hell, that would be awesome. And they wouldn't even have to let you know until the end of season one, if it was going to be a TV show, that it was actually you were fighting.
Yeah.
But then shit gets personal. Yeah, season two, shit just got personal.
Oh, my God. You flipped out and cut your own hand off in retribution.
Nailed it to the wall as a reminder not to fuck with you.
Yeah.
Copyright, survivalpunks.com.
As a quick divergent, and we'll get right back to the show, when I went to the Survival Punks Facebook group and I was asking for show questions and ideas, Matt French asked, if me and you developed a TV show, what would it be? Keep Mike Alive. And I gave him the premise of, you doing everything completely wrong in a survival situation, and then me... I kind of wanted to step in like Wile E. Coyote style and like freeze frame it and then like have voice narration pop up like what Mike should have done. Speedicus Maximus here.
Caltricus Potatoes.
Yes. In his natural state, the Caltricus Potatoes will not do anything correctly in the wilderness. He's rubbing two ice cubes together to make fire. It's not working.
I've been eating nothing but Twinkies for the past month. Made sure to stock up on Twinkies because that's what Woody Harrelson would do.
Some retarded college professor, just to fuck with science and proper nutrition, lived on a diet, nothing but Twinkies for like 30 days or something and lost weight. But because he ate like one Twinkie a day, though, like...
Well, yeah, you would lose weight eating one of any fucking thing a day. I mean, unless you were, like, eating one side of beef a day. But if you're, like, eating one... If you're living on nothing but one snack cake a day, yeah, you're going to lose weight.
Yeah.
Hell, I could burn off the calories fucking eating one... Living on nothing but one snack cake a day just doing my normal shit.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
Not exactly the best nutrition, but yeah, you'll lose weight starving yourself.
So, if you're solo in your area can sustain you for longer than it could in a group. And what I mean by that is, like, during the Great Depression, the white-tailed deer population in North America damn near went extinct.
Oh,
you know, which is basically a varmint pest now. Like, you know, you can't... I see deer, like, every day, basically.
Oh, yeah, you see deer constantly out here. They're as prolific as roaches in this area.
But them and squirrel and any other, like, small edible game in North America was damn near...
Yeah, anything that could be caught or shot easily. Well, yeah, I mean, it was the fucking Great Depression. People were fucking hungry.
Yep.
People are hungry, they'll eat anything. They'll eat other people if it fucking comes down to it.
Yeah. So if your group is large enough... You basically need a bigger area. And I saw like statistics one time for how much area was needed for our hunter-gatherer ancestors per person per square mile. And it was like – it was a few square miles per person for the environment. Yeah, per person. So
holy shit.
Yeah. So let's see. Let's see if I can find that real quick.
But, you know, if you stood every person in America and in the United States up, they could all fit comfortably into the state of Texas.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Let's see. As far as I know, there was one solo hunter-gatherer left in modern times, unless he has died recently. There was a guy in
and it wasn't McDodd.
South America somewhere. That apparently is the last living member of his tribe.
I think he died.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, there hadn't been sightings of him in a long time, so they just assumed that he died somewhere.
Oh, well, you know, he was naked, alone, in the wilderness.
Yeah, nobody spoke his language. Nobody was alive to... Nobody else
And
was
he murdered a dude. Like, scientists came in to try to talk to him, and he just, like, flipped out and buried an arrow in dude's chest and ran off.
Nobody wanted to go in after him.
Well, after that, yeah. Actually, the government...
They fucking, like, no, this is his area. You stay the hell out of it.
So, I'm not going to read this entire article here. It's on persquaremile.com?
Uh-huh.
Weird. Population of 10 people, so a small tribe.
5.6 square kilometers. Population of 50, that's 18.8 square kilometers. 100 is 31.6 square kilometers.
Yeah. That's funny that a website called Per Square Mile has it in kilometers.
Yeah, that is kind of fucked up. Good God, people, get your shit straight.
It's interesting. But yeah.
5.6 square kilometers.
So yeah, let's just say you're going to probably need one or two square miles per person. It kind of gets wibbly after that, you know, for the environment to sustain yourself long enough to be able to replenish itself, you know, without basically hazing the land to the ground. And that's also not counting, if we get into like agriculture here, that changes things quite a bit. So if you move away from a hunter-gatherer type lifestyle to a agriculture lifestyle where you're rotating crops, then you need to have enough room to rest those crops, you know, in between seasons, so you're not destroying the land, because you're not going to be able to go, you know, mass throw on fertilizer to force the system into giving you more than it has. So
5.6, I got to remember that. I'm trying to look up to see what that is in square miles.
Just Google 5.6 square kilometers to miles. It'll spit the answer right out.
Yeah, okay. Oh, here we go. Finally popped up. Let's see. One square, okay. Let's change square feet to square kilometers. And
you're literally doing this the long way around.
Yeah, 5.6. I like converters.
Okay, so while he's figuring that out, what's next? Your power needs are less. So when you're prepping for a solo disaster, obviously it's one person consuming less power, so you have less power needs. It's easier to stockpile, i.e. buy batteries. It's, you know, for stockpiling gas for generators, solar power needs, hand crank needs. All of that stuff becomes a lot less, in some ways manageable.
Okay, so 5.6 square kilometers is 2.162172 square miles. So about 2.16 square miles.
A little over 2 miles.
Yep.
All right. And that's for 10 people?
That was for 10 people.
All right, so obviously 1 square mile for one person is super...
Yeah, that's roomy.
Roomy, yeah. Yeah, so your power needs are a lot less. You're using less power, and you need to generate less power, which is easy and affordable. You know, like getting solar panels is expensive. And, you know, obviously during a disaster, you're not going to spend all day gaming. So
oh my God,
you'll use less.
People in Iceland and Finland, they'd have it made. They're, like, so green up there. I mean, it's, like, a lot of solar, but a hell of a lot of wind power.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I've seen them on Top Gear driving through fucking Finland. Just windmills every fucking where. I mean, not like the old wooden shoe style windmills. The modern ones, which is a giant pole with a fucking wind turbine on it.
Yeah. Apparently.
Well, they're not actually mills. They're just wind turbines because it's not milling anything down at the bottom.
Right. Yeah.
Technical about it, which I
fucking PETA in the United States hates them because birds can fly into them and get killed.
PETA fucking hates everything. Yeah. Okay.
Apparently.
They shut down Ringling Brothers.
The hockey team, the Penguins, recently had like a halftime show with penguins in it, and they got pissed about that.
Oh my God. I mean, yeah, those goddamn penguins are the best fucking fed penguins on the goddamn planet. I am fucking sorry. They have it a hell of a lot better than they do out in the wild. At least in fucking captivity, they know where their fucking next meal's coming from, and they're cute. Nobody wants to mistreat a fucking penguin.
Except for me.
Yeah, except for you, you freak.
Yeah. Hiding is easier. So if you do see a retarded band of, you know, zombie biker gang roving through...
Shoot them.
Well, if they're severely outnumbered, then hiding is easier. If you're trying to hide a large group of people, it gets a little difficult.
Everybody behind that bush.
Yeah, it gets harder. One person hiding, especially if you have time to think and plan through it, not that hard. You can hide pretty easily. So that's an advantage. And
you know what? I would recommend people watch the movie Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves with Kevin Costner.
I don't know why, but I like that movie, so I will double that recommendation.
Well, the reason I say that, if you recall, there's like one or two scenes where it shows how Robin and his merry men, if they didn't actually call them merry men, will like fucking hide from the fucking the sheriff's men, like really fucking quick. They have those things set up where it's like, I don't know. I mean, they didn't have tarps or whatever, but
kind of like a ghillie suit, like a sniper uses.
Where it's propped up and they can roll under it real quick, knock the supports out, and now it just looks like the rest of the ground.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're in an area and you're staying in an area and people come through, you can hide really quick that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 So, obviously, planning concealment like that is a good thing. Having a ghillie suit, making a ghillie suit is not that difficult. So.
It's one of those lost skills that people need to find again.
Yeah. Lost skills.
Yeah. I know this guy named, Mike Hammersmith? What is it?
Jeff Dimitri?
No, yeah.
Jeff Radke?
Jeff Dimitri. No, he has this new alias on Facebook he fucking sent me a friend request. I'm like...
Oh, Johnny Blacksmith.
Yeah, Johnny Hammer, whatever the hell his name is. Johnny Blacksmith, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he knows all about them lost skills.
Hell yeah.
He also knows how to barely wear a head.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Our thoughts and prayers are with you, Jeff.
Exactly.
Or as I'm now calling him, Nearly Headless Jeff.
Nearly Headless Jeff. There are cons to solo prepping. There are. There really are.
There's only one person to do the work.
Yeah. Yeah, there won't be any help. So you have to do everything. If you're gonna plant crops, you've got to do everything.
You've got to till the soil. Yep. You have got to plant the seeds. You have got to fertilize them. You've got to water them. You've got to maintain them. You've got to get rid of the fucking weeds. You've got to
keep birds from eating your seeds. Exactly.
You got to keep away the fucking predators. You got to do something about the fucking insects because they can destroy your fucking crops. And this is all, on the one thing, the amount of crops you're growing makes it harder on you. I mean, if you want a shitload of crops, then that's a hell of a lot more extra work.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And that's just on that. Yep. If you're going to defend your land.
Oh, yeah.
You're doing it solo.
Yep.
There are tricks, booby traps. There are, different ways to sort of force multipliers.
But you know
so
something?
To make yourself more advantageous, but yeah.
Yeah, you know what the problem is with a booby trap, though? And with virtually all the traps I've seen, like...
They're non-discriminatory?
Well, they're non-discriminatory, yes, there's that. But they only work once without a hell of a lot of work to get them very quickly set back up.
Yeah.
I mean, once a trap is sprung, a trap is sprung. And that's great if you for catching, like, one fucking person. But what if he's got, like, 20 fucking friends?
I mean, you just have to make lots of traps and lots of... I mean, so it's...
Yeah,
it's,
but once the first person falls into it, people are going to fucking start looking for him.
Do you have different kinds, though? I mean, there's all sorts of... You have to vary your traps.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you got your first guy. He's hanging... He's dangling from the tree like, okay, we're on somebody's land who knows how to make traps.
Yeah.
Keep your eyes peeled, boys.
So, there's... It is hard. It's defending by yourself is hard.
Yeah.
You know your land better than anyone else, so fighting off invaders that way, you get a little bit of home field advantage, but still, you're fighting numbers, and it's skill, preparation, and luck.
Hey,
I don't like luck.
Hey, there are motherfuckers out there, well-trained motherfuckers. I'm talking about Navy SEAL Delta Force shit. These that know all about this, the British SAS. I mean, they fucking, all this shit. There's people out there that can survive very, very well by themselves, including fortifying their land and keep making sure that they're always fed.
Right. But to always assume that you are the snowflake that is different from everybody else is how you get yourself fucked. Mm-hmm. If you are listening to this podcast and you are that former SAS, former Green Beret, former, high-level operator like that, then this doesn't really apply to you. You probably can do that. If you are Joe Schmo that works at a computer all day and has never held a gun in his life, you're probably fucked.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of stuff... See, that's... Okay, that's part of prepping. It's not just preparing your supplies. It's not just preparing your ammo, preparing your food, preparing your... You got to prepare you. And if you yourself are not prepared for this shit, like physically, like I'd be fucked right now, honestly. I mean, I'm getting in better shape and I've lost some weight and yay, I'm proud of that. But I couldn't build a fucking house right now. I don't know all those skills.
Right.
I mean, I guess I could with YouTube and stuff, but I'd be cussing a lot. It'd take me 3 times longer and I'm... Fucking...
If the grid was down there, it'd be no YouTube.
Yeah, see? I'd be fucked.
Yep. You have to learn all the skills yourself.
Actually, I wouldn't be fucked. Why? Because I've got good buddies that will keep Mike alive.
Yes. You have to learn all the skills yourself. So when you have a group, you could have different roles divvied up to different people. When you're by yourself, you've got to be farmer, doctor, engineer, blacksmith. You have to wear many hats.
Why would you wear mini hats? I'd want a hat that fits.
Yeah. You have to do a lot of things. You have to really and there is a place to be the jack of all trades. I think in modern life, it is way better to be a jack of all trades, than it is to be a specialist, to be a niche specialist.
Yeah, that's the thing about that saying. I mean, people will remember jack of all trades, but then they'll be like, yeah, jack of all trades, master of none. Well, the entire phrase is jack of all trades, master of none. It's much better than being the master of one.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's great. And it's awesome to be good at a lot of shit than just like awesome at one thing and sucky at everything else.
Yeah. I mean, one of the prepper mottos is one is none, two is one. Why would you have one skill when you can have two? But there's a point at which you really, you naturally can't be good at everything.
No.
You just can't be.
But you can be adequate at a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but some things would be better to have. It just makes it easier to be able to divvy up the work and not have to master everything.
Yeah.
So I say there's pros and cons. Like, yes, you should not be niche specialized and pigeonholed, but if you can have a group and you can have a veteran war doctor, if you can have a doctor, you know, a trained surgeon, an ER doctor that's dealt with that.
Oh, it looks like I got here just in the nick of timey-wimey.
Exactly. That's even if you study all the, you know, books and practice everything and take, you know, little classes here and there, you will not be able to match the experience of a veteran doctor.
Yeah, nobody can be good at everything. If everybody could be good at everything, then there'd be no jobs. It'd just be a shitload of people living in their own little hunts.
Yeah. I mean, to really see an example of this, go find the first season, not the second season, of the TV show The Colony. Where,
oh, I love season one of The Colony.
Yeah, in that one, they really got a lot of very specialized people in a group together. But then there was a lot of times where they had to step out of their comfort zones. They had to do things that they hadn't done and really push them. So you get to see the dynamic of having a lot of different skilled people together and how it forms. Like, me and Mike kind of agree, although they're like, we kind of agree that the first season, everyone was like...
Overqualified. I mean, they had... It was like a... This is supposed to be a random cross-section of America. Now, everybody... They had all the perfect skills for what they need, which is, I think... Spoilers, if you haven't seen this. Which is why I think, like, halfway
they
through... They took out the doctor.
Oh, right.
Because they had a doctor and a nurse, right. Dude. They weren't there together.
Right.
They never worked together. But they had a fucking doctor and a fucking nurse. And in the middle of this, they removed the doctor.
Right.
So, the only medical person they had was the nurse. But they still had a professionally trained medical person. And honestly, nurses a lot of times will
do more.
There are a hell of a lot more hands-on than doctors are.
Yeah.
Well, like, perfect example. A few years ago, this guy that I work with used to be a paramedic. And... He was in the hospital, and this one doctor, brilliant doctor in his fucking in his field, very well respected, but could not intubate a patient to save his fucking life or to save their fucking life. Bruised this patient's fucking throat all to hell trying to fucking intubate it. That's where you get the fucking
breathing tube in.
Exactly. Oh. Down their throat. But you know, a paramedic or a nurse could do it just like phoom.
Exactly.
But doctors don't do that shit.
Right. So, yeah, in that case, having a skilled medical person really makes a lot of sense. And by a skilled medical person, even a paramedic
or a veterinarian.
Or veterinarian, yeah. They're basically the same.
Veterinarians, honestly, I think veterinarians are, they're a great medical person to have around. Especially a veterinary surgeon, they know how to work on, they have to train themselves to work on a shit ton of different species. So they basically know where to go, know how to go into damn near anything and fix it.
Right. I'd say on the counterpoint, though, I remember when I was in my teen years, my dad was hospitalized for – he had weird scabs break out all over his legs, like giant blistering scab pus things.
Scabies?
No. But the doctors had no idea what was going on. Like, it wasn't like – they just couldn't figure it out. And this old crotchety-ass doctor came in and was like – oh, that's definitely a case of blibbity blobbity blobbity blobbies. And sure enough, whatever it was, that old man doctor who'd seen that like 30 years before, he sure as fuck knew what it was and fixed it. So, you know, like, there's just experience over, you know, like just textbook flibbity flabbity. So,
That's the thing about doctors. Yes, there's a shitload of different doctors, but even within that profession, there's like specialties because no one person can keep up with all those fucking skills. That's why you have dermatologists.
Yeah.
That's why you have oncologists and surgeons and general practitioners.
Midwives and all sorts of shit.
Technically, the mortician is a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of schooling that goes into that. And sort of the last con to solo prepping is humans are social animals.
Oh, yeah.
Do not underestimate being alone.
It can drive a person crazy. If you stay alone by yourself long enough, you're going to lose completely all your fucking inhibitions. And you're not going to know how to deal with people when that finally comes up. I'm not a religious man, but even in the first book of the Bible, God had created Adam and said, it is not good for man to be alone, so made him a mate.
Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I couldn't resist. That's too funny.
Yeah, that's a shout out to you again, Matt.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you watch a lot of these, like, survival shows, like the Alone in the Woods.
I loved Alone in the Wild. It was Alone in the Wild. That motherfucker trying to survive out there 90 days by himself. He was talking like a dead elk fucking head.
Yeah.
And he was like crying all the time. And he was only out there 50 days out of the 90.
Yeah.
Well, he made a really stupid mistake. He left an area where there was a lot of food and went to an area where he thought there was going to be more food. There was like a tenth of the food.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Like, that's why in the rule of threes, it's, I mean, being alone, being loneliness is one of the things that can kill you. Humans, I mean, some people are like, oh, I'm fine, I can be a hermit. But being a hermit really is like, it takes a special breed of people. I remember a couple years ago, there's a news story of a guy that had lived in the wilderness and had been stealing food and stuff for like 30 years. And this dude was seriously fucked. Like, chances are you're not that mentally fucked in the head. Chances are. I mean, I understand that our audience is probably, we're a little out there. We're not your average survival podcast here. But.
No, we're not.
But humans are built to be social animals. That's just all there is to it. And if you are that rare breed that really is a true to the core hermit, you're probably not listening to this podcast. You probably hate people, and you're in the woods already, and you're stealing food from campers. Probably.
I mean, okay, and this, just one more further piece of evidence that, you know, humans are, like, very social. Our podcast, honestly, I mean, look at our podcast. It works because we have each other.
Yeah,
we're here to keep each other fucking motivated. And even when I'm not here, you get, like, I mean, hell, when I'm not here, you get guests, so you get guest hosts. I mean, it's not good to be alone.
Sometimes, yeah. I like the dynamic of multiple people on a podcast, to the degree. Sometimes it gets to be too many people on a podcast, and you don't know who's talking, and you don't care. No, I mean, like, I've heard podcasts with, like, five hosts on them, and you're
No, I've heard that. It becomes a giant clusterfuck. No, like,
I think three is kind of the maximum. When you get beyond three, you're like, it's too jibbly-jobbly.
Now, we couldn't do a podcast with another person. I honestly don't think so. Me and you, not on the regular, no.
No.
No, I mean, hell, I mean, we talk over each other already.
Right. So.
We're impatient. We like to be heard.
Group prepping pros.
Okay.
We're on to group prepping now. You have more help in gathering resources and acquiring resources. So, you know, farming and hunting. When you, generally when you set up a survival group, you would require people to have their own stuff, so they bring in their stuff.
Yep.
You know, they'll be setting up stuff like that, and then you have more energy surplus, so you have more people to go till that field, to go farm, to go hunt and gather.
Yes, stuff can be divvied up.
Exactly.
Delegated.
And that helps out immensely. Like,
oh, yeah.
There's a South African tribe, not South African, South American tribe.
Diplomatic immunity.
And, They alternate around, like, so they have like a central hub where their village is, and they go farm, like, rotating like a patch of land in a kind of like a sun type shape that radiates out. So they have like the circle of their village,
the circle of life.
A strip goes out away from it, so they go out there as an entire village and basically just clear cut this strip of land away from the village, and then plant it and farm it. And then they have, you know, the next sectors that are like in various parts of regrowth. So, you know, the next year they move to the next section while that section heals up. And then by the time they get all the way around, like spokes on a wheel, by the time they get all the way around, the first section has regrown and they have to clear that out.
That's
and
fucking fertile. That's brilliant.
That's, I kind of want to set up a chicken hut that way, where
a chicken hunt,
a chicken hut, like a chicken run. Oh. So that they have their home base, and then I let them graze out spokes from it. daily. So, like, you know, 30 days, 30 spots or so, or, you know, maybe even half that, where it's like 15 days, and they graze the same spot 2 days in a row. The time they get back to the first spot again, it's recovered from them eating there. So, more people, like, if you are by yourself, there's no way you could clear that strip of land by yourself in enough time to make a difference. You know, this would be a long process of you know, cutting down wood. You'd have to basically go to slash and burn, which introduces a whole host of problems. Actually, I just read that South Americans using slash and burn farming techniques is what led to both the rise of malaria and the development of sickle cell anemia.
I can see why it would lead to the rise of malaria. Those fucking mosquitoes don't have as many places to hide now, so they're all out in the open.
Actually, it led to malaria because when you got rid of the closed forest growth, you had big open areas now that divots in the land, developed puddles, and then people built their shelters near it that had places for the mosquitoes to breed and hide at. They had all those puddles to breed in.
I don't see about sickle cell anemia, though.
Sickle cell anemia was a mutation on humans to keep from dying from malaria.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes, that's why we have sickle cell anemia. It was a mutation.
Oh, my God.
Because if you have sickle cell anemia, you either won't get malaria or it'll barely even hit you. And you have a good chance of passing on. And when you move out of an area with that, sickle cell anemia generally tends to breed itself out in a few generations.
Huh. It's weird. It's kind of like the disease version of the fucking Newt and the garter snake.
Exactly, yeah. Humans have developed a lot of interesting adaptations like that.
Oh,
so
I'm sure I've talked about it on here before.
More to defend. So like we said before, when you're solo, basically you have to hide because defending is really hard unless you are a trained professional who has done that. If you're an elite operator and you've got that plus 10 to defense beard going on, if you don't, then you're probably fucked, like we said. But with a group, you have more people. You can set up watch locations. You can set up sniper spots. You can set up, you can do a lot of tactics to defend your area with a group, as opposed to when you're by yourself, it's really hard.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, more people just, one, it's more guns trained on the invaders. It's a presence of force. So, if someone sees a single victim, you know, that piece of shit mindset is, oh, let's fuck this guy. You know, let's just kill him and take his stuff. When you see a formidable force, let's move on.
Yeah. No, taking out one guy is easy. But, I mean, when it's 20 different people, I mean, that's 20 different minds you're having to work with. You got people that you could do fucking, like, security walks on a regular basis.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and you know what else is another pro to having a group of people?
Huh.
Because you now divvy up the work, you actually can afford yourself. Each person can be afforded a little downtime.
Oh, yeah.
When you're by yourself, you're working constantly. I mean, your whole life is making sure that you stay alive, and that's not living. That's just surviving.
Right.
When you've got a group of people, there can be room for a little living in there. And downtime is fucking important.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, downtime is important to, you know, just do stuff you like or just to fucking relax and have a moment with your thoughts.
I 100% agree. I would say with solo prepping, there would be some downtime because there's just times where you just can't do stuff or you're just, you know what? I didn't even mention it. With solo prepping, if you get injured, you are down for the count.
Oh, yeah.
If you sprain your ankle, you're just out of the game for a couple days.
Yeah.
Just done.
Yeah. The only people there to take care of you is you, once again.
Yeah. And if that's a serious injury, it could be game over for you.
Yeah, it could be the death of you.
Right. With a group, you know, it'll suck, but everyone can pull together and do that extra workload while you're down for the count,
mm-hmm.
You know, and help you get better to get back up. So that's one thing I didn't even mention. I didn't have in my notes, but yeah, injuries, they take out a whole new dynamic, whether you're in a group or you're solo.
Oh, you see, Now this brings up a very interesting. This brings up a very interesting memory. In Vietnam, as well as in other wars, but it was very prevalent in Vietnam. The goal of a lot of traps and stuff was to try not to kill people, but to disable them, to injure them severely, to where they could no longer move by themselves. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because if you kill a guy, you've taken one person out of the war. If you badly injure a guy, you've now taken three people out because you need two motherfuckers to carry the stretcher.
Yeah. So it reminds me of a battle tactic used in a book series that I've talked about a few times, the sort of truth book series, where, there was magic in this book series, and some magicians so basically it was one small force versus a very huge force, and the huge force was evil, of course, and the small force there's a tactic they developed to fight the large ones using magic, but not magic exactly because they had magic shields that would stop the magic directly. So they used magic to pulverize glass into like a fine powder. Mm-hmm. So glass was developed into a powder, and then they lofted it into the wind because it was so fine and powdery.
Oh, God, people breathing glass shards.
Breathing and blinking it.
Oh, yeah. That would fuck a person up from the inside quick.
Yeah, so not everyone died. It did kill a lot of people. Obviously, you know, glass getting inside you.
Oh, God.
Devastates you.
Tiny little micro cuts all inside your fucking esophagus, yeah, and your trachea and your lungs.
Yeah, but the bigger thing was, you know, a massive portion of this army was now blind. And they couldn't find their way back. And they had, you know, other people had to help them find their way around. They couldn't just, like, you know, so, yeah, maiming people and having their buddies care for them takes out, you know, it's a force multiplier. You do that. I mean, obviously, I don't think in real life pulverizing glass and then sending it in the air will work, but it might. I don't know.
I mean, because, okay, glass comes from sand for the most part. And anybody that spent any amount of time, like, on the beach, especially rolling around in the sand, you will end up with little cuts.
Yeah.
You will. It's just fucking unavoidable. There's sometimes that one jagged piece of sand that will fucking get you. So, I mean, and powderize, I mean, I don't know how fine you can pulverize and turn into a powdered glass. I mean, somebody out there is bound to know.
I'm sure you can get it pretty damn fine. I'm sure there's a point at which it's too fine to, well, I don't know, there may be no point where it's too fine to do damage.
See, to the point where it gets carried by the air, at this point, it's just dust.
Yeah. Maybe you can send it up in the air on balloons and then drop it on people.
That'd be about the only way you could go with that.
Or, I mean, you could attack your enemies with bats that have bombs attached to them so they burn down their houses.
Oh, my
True
God.
True story.
Oh, my God. The fuck? World War II got crazy.
It did. So yeah.
Bat bombs.
Bat bombs was a good one.
It's fucking brilliant.
Was
that the one where they accidentally destroyed their own lab?
Yeah, their own resources and the general's car were killed. Oh, yeah, were destroyed by bats.
The fucking bat bombs. What did you think about the pigeon missiles?
I thought that was crazy. Yeah. The show we're referring to is on Netflix. It's the White Rabbit Project.
Yeah, it's
stars. It's worth a good watch.
Cary Grant and Tori from
formerly from the MythBusters.
Yeah, formerly from the MythBusters. It's a pretty good show. I like it.
Yeah, definitely worth a check out. I think we've covered more recessors are brought in. So obviously you have more people, and to run any good group, you have to require people to bring in sort of minimum things. Otherwise, you're just supporting people. So there's that. But a group prepping is a social environment. So much like Mike's downtime that he mentioned, you've got a group to keep you from going crazy from being alone.
Oh, that brings me back around to a point that I was trying to make earlier about going crazy from being alone. Like even Les Stroud, you know, the Survivor man, you all know who the fuck I'm talking about. This one group of people I could talk about that wouldn't know who the fuck Les Stroud was. But no, he always carries that fucking harmonica with him to stave off the boredom from being alone in what little downtime that he does get, which brought about one of my favorite moments on the show when he was way the fuck up north in polar bear country and he starts at his horrible little fucking igloo that he's made.
Yeah.
And he starts playing the harmonica. He's like, and then he stops really quickly. He's like, You know, I was warned that polar bears are attracted to strange noises, so maybe this is one time I shouldn't play the harmonica.
Oh, yeah.
Because he wakes up the next morning, there's, like, polar bear tracks, like, 10 feet over from where his head was. Yeah. Oh, that would be fucking nerve-wracking.
That's super. Oh.
I mean, because, yeah, polar bears, straight-up carnivores.
Yeah. they are some vicious motherfuckers, so he got super lucky.
No, see, that's why, see, because of, you know, the fucking polar ice caps and all that shit, which I still don't think humans are responsible for. But, I mean, you know, it's cyclic. But anyway, because the polar bears have been going further south, though, they've been breeding with the grizzlies and mm-hmm. making growler bears. And that's the thing about grizzlies. They live on a diet that's largely herbivorous.
Yeah.
I mean, they are omnivores. They will eat animals. Trust me on that. But they eat a lot of fucking, like, nuts and berries and shit. I mean, they do that.
Yeah.
But growler bears are picking up a lot of the insane carnivorous traits from the polar bear side of things.
Well, you think,
and they survive better in warmer climates.
In the far north, there's nothing. There's no plant vegetation to eat. Like,
no.
The Inuit lived on basically a protein, like a meat and fat diet. Like, they had very little percentage of
It's all meat and blubber.
Veggies, yeah.
No, that's the but this is creating this new apex predator, which is going down further where more people live.
Nice.
I know. Hey, life finds a way. So that's why I'm not worried about the fucking polar bears going extinct. I mean, they might go it's not really going extinct if they're part of
a new species.
The genesis of a new species. Wow. They're evolving.
It's like that fucking I Am Legend book, not movie. I don't know if humanity becomes a new species and you're the last of true humans, are you really not extinct? I think you are. If it's a new species, then it's a new species. So I don't know.
Better to die than live like you, a bitchy trampoline.
Yeah. There are cons to being in a group. I think we've made the point that we personally think that a group is probably the way to go. For many reasons that I think we've covered. Mm-hmm. Over, and we didn't even talk about Lone Wolf, and I will probably end the show on some notes about that, some thoughts on Lone Wolf survival, not just solo, but the next degree in Lone Wolf. When you're in a group, politics come into play, and by politics, I don't mean state, federal, local politics. I mean group dynamic politics, and I hate all forms of politics. You know, where you just have to be. You have to be a certain way to be able to work within that group there is what I'm saying. And in the 299 Days books, they touched on group politics quite a lot. It will come into play, and it will be a pain in the ass.
That's the whole fucking reason politics exists in the first fucking place, okay? It's because you get a large enough group of people together, people are all going to have their own things, and you're going to wind up voting on shit.
Yeah, you're going to have to come up with...
It's the civilized alternative.
Yeah, that's when you need sort of group rules, group laws, if you will, to govern each other. You know, certain behaviors are unacceptable, and you need ways to deal with them. You know, like, and it's probably better to hash these out before you have an issue where you don't know what to do about. You know, i.e., you have in-group stealing. What are your rules on dealing with that? You know, different things. Like, there probably is going to be a point where you have, like, a person needs to not be in the group. You know, do you murder that person because for whatever reason you can't have them there? Do you exile them?
Which itself could lead to its own problems.
Which itself could lead to problems, exactly. They could turn tail on you and bring back a larger group to murder you, and they know your dynamic. So
yep.
You need to really think hard about these things, and that's something like you don't have to worry about when you're a solo prepper. You really don't have a lot of politics of self-governing. And I do think that there should be rules you set for yourself. You know, and then following rules and patterns and routines is a good thing. There's not a whole lot of argument with yourself. You're definitely not going to murder yourself if you break a rule because you're probably Well, if you're going to be the kind of person that's going to break a rule, you're not going to care anyway. So that's just what it is. And I kind of mentioned that you have to get along with others. There's just, I mean, especially like since you need these people, it's a group dynamic. You're each mutually helping each other. It's probably better not to just be a complete asshole to people. You know, like say that you're the farmer of this group. It's probably not a good idea to just be an outright dick to the doctor because you might need him.
Yeah.
Just vice versa. I mean, well, there's no point to really be a dick just for the sake of being a dick anyway. But you gotta kind of like play into the things that, like, you know, maybe. Okay, so maybe you won't go out of your way to fuck the doctor's wife because then he's just not gonna help you. I mean, you know, like, you gotta like find ways to work within the community so that you're not sabotaging the community and you have a successful group.
Yeah, I mean, and if you are the kind of guy that wants to fuck the doctor's wife, you need to find you a polyamorous group.
Something like that.
Where the love is free all over the place. All over your face, neck, and chest, you dirty bitch.
Yeah, so in a group, trust is an issue. Like we said, when you're soul prepping, you only have to trust yourself, which, for the most part, you can trust yourself. You're not going to sell yourself out. But in a group, it's hard to really sort of, you know, figure out who you can trust. You know, because if you're completely distrusting, then the group won't really work well. It won't have a good dynamic.
No.
And if you blindly trust everyone, then that can also lead to problems. You got to find this balance of, you know, who do you trust? When and why do you trust them? And what to do when you actually can't trust them? When it really, like, when you have enough, you know, proof that they are untrustworthy. So, and for the most part, I believe you have to trust people until proven otherwise. Much like the way our, you know, criminal justice system is supposed to work, innocent until proven guilty. I tend to run on the trustworthy until proven otherwise. And just for...
Basically, you got to give people enough rope to hang themselves with.
Exactly. And hope and pray that they don't. And, you know, yourself, you know, work up to be a good role model there. It's kind of like when I took my concealed carry permit class, we were taught that we had to be better than people that do not concealed carry. We have to be above them and above their pettiness. You know, we're not allowed to simply fly off the handle when someone pisses us off because we have a gun.
You have a means of very quickly and abruptly ending someone's life.
To quote a great man, with great power comes great responsibility. So it's the same in a survival group. You've got to bear that responsibility that comes from the great power that you get from having people to do that work, to having those doctors and those nurses and those people to do the, you know, do extra things. It's extra resources, it's extra power. You just got to be better. So that's my thoughts on solo prepping versus group prepping. And to touch on real quick before we move on to the Amazon item of the day and before we end the show, we talked about solo prepping in a responsible manner and group prepping in a responsible manner. We did not talk about forming roving biker gangs, and we did not talk about being the lone wolf survivalist asshole.
We might do a whole episode on those.
We probably could. But if you're...
It'd be like survival punk after dark.
Yeah. We need to do something for the punks. But yeah. If you're that solo prepper, that lone wolf prepper who thinks that when the shit hits the fan, you're going to whip on your ghillie suit, pull out your sniper rifle, go find an easy target, and take their shit from them, you are scum. You are scum. If you're listening to the show...
You're also not alone, by the way. There'll be a bunch of them. They'll have so much fun taking each other out that I'll just sit back and, yeah, enjoy the fact that there's no longer laws.
Yeah, there's As far as the survival punk philosophy of shit hit the fan goes, there is no tolerance for that behavior. There's no quarter given for that behavior. You have become a looter, and I will sit on my house with my gun and pick you off.
Yep.
You are scum.
Yep.
And I don't like scum.
No.
I treat people with respect, even though I tend to be an asshole at some times.
Yeah, see what happens when you come fuck with the spa ranch.
Yeah,
the Survival Punk Army ranch.
The Survival Punk Army, yes.
Spar. Yes. We are Spartans!
Yes. We are.
Yes, that's Spartans. What we will call ourselves when all you fuckers head to the Survival Punk Army ranch. We are the Spartans. Survival
Punk Army.
But act fast. There's only room for about 300 of us.
I need an R and a T. What's a good acronym? Survival Punk Army.
Ranch.
Ranch. What's the T for?
You drink it. With crumpets.
No.
Topographical.
Tactical. Alliance. The Survival Punk Army Ranch Tactical Alliance.
Yep.
We are Sparta! Yeah. And Spartans, what is your profession?
I don't know what sounds they make. I've only seen that movie once.
It's sort of a weird grunt. Ooh ah, hoo ah. I don't really know the noise they make.
I love that. See, I brought more soldiers than you.
Exactly.
Leonidas was only one of two kings.
I do know. You listened to that? Wait, did you listen to that latest episode of Hardcore History?
The three part kings.
Yes.
Kings of Kings. Yeah. I just got done with it yesterday. Actually, that's not the latest one. He's released a Blitz episode.
I didn't listen to that one.
Oh well, it's on there.
Yeah, I saw it. I got the email.
No, but I just got done listening to that. That whole fucking thing with the Macedonians, aka the Spartans, and that stuff, and the combing their hair.
The Lacedaemonians.
Yeah, the Spartans are fucking. And it's funny because
they only talked in like Clint Eastwood one-liners.
Yeah, I love that. He kept referring to them as a bunch of Clint Eastwoods.
Yes. Once again, if you've not listened to Hardcore History, that needs to be your other podcast you listen to. Check it out. And the King of Kings episodes deals a lot with the Battle of Thermopylae, the 300 battle.
Yeah.
I literally got goosebumps listening to it.
Yeah, it's basically, it's mostly about the Persian Empire and the Greco-Persian Wars, but
yeah,
it's just so good. Guy uses a lot of like pop culture references to talk about history.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, Dan Carlin.
It's definitely a good one. The Amazon item of the day.
Oh, Amazon item of the day.
I want to make dovetails, so I got this neat little, it's a 1-in-8 and a 1-in-5 dovetail marker. So instead of getting...
What is a dovetail, James?
It's a wood joining technique. You use it to make boxes, corners, drawers, whatnot.
Are you talking about where two pieces of wood come together at an angle and they like got interlocking teeth like a zipper?
Yes, like the tail of a dove.
Exactly. And so basically the little item you're holding, it kind of looks like a metal fucking bow tie.
It's like a metal bow tie. One end is a little bigger, the 1-in-5, the 1-in-8 is a little bit smaller. You can use it to mark out your dovetails and then cut them instead of getting, there's a lot of like really weird and convoluted ways to mark out your dovetails using, you know, a slide ruler and an angle ruler and blah, 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 and doing math and figure out the 1-in-8, you know, angles. But this you just slap on there and mark around. And then once you cut out your, I believe it's your pins, you then use them to cut out your tails or vice versa. So you basically lay one board over the other board, then trace out the interior, and then cut that out, and then they fit together.
Like a zipper.
Like a zipper, exactly. So I'm going to be using this to make a dovetail, and it just looks like
it'll save a lot. And to fulfill your half of our gentleman's wager.
Correct. You did do a painting, and I saw it, and it is not bad.
I'm going to do another painting today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I decided I'm going to – I got some slightly smaller canvases because I got a 2-pack for like $5. So – Until I start getting really good at it and get, you know, more delicate and practice touch, I want to do work on these smaller canvases. I'm spending less money that way.
Right.
And B, I can focus more on like one thing. Hell, I might get some 6x6 and just put one tree on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah, I'm working up to the paintings that I really want to do. Yeah, I threw a TARDIS under the first one just because I fucking had to.
You could, yeah.
No, but I'm basically going to do a very Bob Ross-esque. My next painting is just going to be like a mountain with some trees and maybe a little pond down at the bottom. That's the next thing. I'm not going to be following along with him. I've watched dozens and dozens and dozens of episodes. I can quote Bob better than Bob could. So
there you go.
I'm just going to fucking freeball it.
Awesome. I want to see that, and you should actually share pictures in the group.
I've got a picture of the first painting.
And yeah, you should put it in the Feral Punks group so we can see it.
I'm definitely going to.
I'll put a picture of my dovetail in there.
I'm just so gun-shy about it because I'm my own worst enemy.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And on that terrible disappointment, I think it's time for us to end.
It is.
So for the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
This is James Sickwin Burnett.
And remember, whether you're being solo or whether you're being part of a group, don't be a dick.
DIY... to survive, use guys.
Use guys!